C1PH. Number 6A.
Kathy, when you read the text of this chapter, and if you read it consecutively through, and perhaps sometimes it's good to read it rather quickly, sometimes it's good to ponder each statement, but when you read it through rather quickly, and I do that always then when I want to get the main melody of a whole chapter. Here in this chapter, at the point where the fifth subject ends and the sixth subject begins, you suddenly feel, oh, she dropped the melody, or she lost the melody. She's giving quite a new tune, so to say. Here she makes a paragraph which reads, when man is governed by God, the ever-present mind, who understands all things, man knows that with God all things are possible. And with your spiritual ear you say, oh, she changed the melody. Because up to this point she was always speaking about in the proportion as we understand. If we understand our proportionate admission, she said before, of the claims of good determine the harmony of our existence, our health, our longevity, our Christianity. It was our understanding, and suddenly she comes and says, mind, who understands all things. And you can't help feeling she changes completely the standpoint. Well, if one reads further, one can see, yes, she changed the standpoint, just as in the days of creation, the standpoint is changed when it goes from the fifth day to the sixth day. Mr. Dawley used to teach us that in the fifth day, the days of creation become numerals of infinity, therefore still in the realm of metaphysics. But when we touch the sixth day, then we have the seven synonymous terms. Well, this is what you feel here explained very practically through the chapter, that up to the fifth subject, it was all metaphysics. It has all to do with our attitude towards God, with our understanding of God, with seeing through mortal mind from our standpoint of our understanding. And now, suddenly, she changes and says, when man is governed by God, the ever-present mind, who understands all things? Man knows with God. Now he knows with God all things are possible. She goes on and says, the only way to this living truth which heals the sick is found in the science of divine mind. Before it was mostly the metaphysical method, that the metaphysical method should not be mixed with other methods, and so on. And now it is the science of mind, as taught and demonstrated by Christ Jesus. So here we get a very practical illustration in this chapter of what we were considering before as that step from metaphysics to science. The first five subjects here were metaphysical steps. But when it comes to the tone of truth, and truth is the whole, then it changes over to the synonymous terms. And it changes over to the standpoint of science. Again, we said that metaphysics is defined as the contemplation of ideas. Science is the contemplation of the infinite one, including within itself all ideas. So the change is from metaphysics to science by changing in consciousness our standpoint from the metaphysical standpoint, which is considering ideas and entertaining ideas, metaphysical ideas against human beliefs, seeing that metaphysical ideas have the preponderance over human beliefs, seeing that we must nurture the ideas and lean on the ideas and trust the ideas. And now, suddenly, the step is made into science where mind, capital M, understands all things. Where no more we understand all things. That in proportion to our understanding, our health improves, our life improves, our experience improves. Now, it's no more a sense that something has to be improved and healed and so on, but here now is that statement that you can go out from the synonymous term, from the whole, from the oneness, because the synonymous term includes all the ideas. Therefore, it's the infinite one. Each synonymous term is representing the infinite one in its in a different way, but it's the one, because each synonymous term stands for the whole of God, for God. So I felt perhaps we could consider together for half an hour or so the difference in attitude which we get if our mentality is changing from metaphysics to science. I have touched on this step about a year ago, only in a brief way, and so I felt perhaps here I can put in between this little exposition to make clear to ourselves that we have understood the difference of method, of practice, if we think in terms of metaphysics or in terms of science. So I will go through the seven synonymous terms and take out of every synonymous term two or three or four ideas and show them how it differs if we deal with them metaphysically or from the point of view of science. Just to impregnate, so to say, our consciousness properly with that difference, and that it is an enormous difference. Let's take mind. I always take first metaphysics and then science. In mind, usually we speak about thinking about God. That's metaphysics. We think about God. What do we do in science? In science, mind knows all, or mind knows us. It's not we knowing God, but God knowing us. That's a difference. If we know God, and if we think about God, we can only think about God in a limited way, because the we is a limitation. But if we take the standpoint of science and see that mind knows all, then we have an infinite, unlimited understanding. In metaphysics, we say that man thinks and that God is the one that is thought of. So man thinks about God. But that's not what happens in reality. In reality, in science, it is the other way around, that man is known by God. Not that man knows God, but man is known by God. And man is not a thinker about God, but man is what God is conscious of himself. So can you see what a big difference it is when I change from metaphysics to science?
Yes.
Or we, in metaphysics, we are seeking the right idea. We are seeking the right answer. We are seeking to find our right decision and so on. We are seeking. But in science, we are not seeking. Science is where God gives you his idea. We are not seeking. God gives you his idea. And it is the constant revelation that comes to us. In metaphysics, we have true desire. Prayer is desire, or desire is prayer, she says. But in science, there is no such a thing as desire. There, we have the mind of Christ. The mind of Christ, which knows everything. And then it is the mind of Christ that leads all true desire. Then the mind of Christ dominates desire and leads all. I'm always very impressed that the textbook starts with desire is prayer, or prayer is desire is prayer, but that it ends by that statement in the Apocalypse, really, where she says that the spiritual idea will guide all true desire. Then it has a higher sense. In metaphysics, we study the letter. In science, we are not studying the letter. In science, we have the mind of Christ, and that's the spirit. In science, we have not a separation of spirit and letter. The letter of science is the mind of Christ, and that is wedded to the spirit of it. We say in metaphysics that we have to clarify an idea by looking at the idea from all the different angles, from the seven angles and so on. And so we are reasoning out what is the right idea. That's metaphysics. But in science, God gives us the perfect idea, the complete idea, the conviction of the right idea, that idea which does not need anymore to be clarified if it is a right idea or not a right idea. It comes on us. It is impelled on us. God gives us that right idea. Metaphysics cannot reveal something new. But science reveals. And that's the reason why students of Christian Science who stay on that level of metaphysics, of thinking about God and thinking about men and so on, cannot have new revelations, because it shuts the door on revelation. Science reveals, because revelation is from God, from the infinite source. And so we have to see that if we want to have revelation, we have to make that step out of metaphysics into science, where we go out from the infinite one, because only the infinite one can reveal what it has in store for us. Is that clear, that big difference? Now let's take one or two from spirit and see what is the difference. In spirit, metaphysics is that which is above physics. Therefore, it goes out from matter and lifts thought above matter. Whereas in science, we go out from God. In science, we really reason from the divine mind and not by lifting us out of matter and seeing what is the idea behind matter, that there must be a spiritual idea behind matter. In science, we don't take into account the fact of matter. We let the divine mind reveal itself, the true spiritual idea. We say in metaphysics that every material belief hints to the existence of a spiritual reality. And so most efforts are concerned with taking the material universe and seeing what it hints to spiritually. Tremendous job. Whereas, from the standpoint of science, we let spirit reflect itself on us and let spirit reveal itself to us those ideas which we need at the very moment. In metaphysics, we separate between good and evil, and that's necessary in metaphysics, and it's a good thing, but this is separating, and it still hinges on the belief of duality, that there is something evil and something good, and I have to make a clear distinction between them and the separation between them. But from the point of view of science, we see that understanding and spiritual understanding cannot distinguish between good and evil. Spiritual understanding cannot make a distinction between good and evil, because spiritual understanding only knows itself. There is no consciousness of anything unlike itself. Zeddy says in miscellaneous writings, the consciousness of good has no consciousness or knowledge of evil. Therefore, an evil is not a quality to be known or eliminated by good. Good does not know evil. Therefore, can you see why we get that enormous freedom when we make that step from metaphysics to science in the tone of spirit? Instead of constantly judging what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is evil, what is mortal, what is immortal, what is temporal, what is eternal, what is corporeal, what is incorporeal, constantly having to separate and finally to have two distinct worlds. Instead of doing that, from the point of view of science, we just have that which spirit reveals itself as spiritual ideas, and they don't know evil, the mortal, the temporal. It's that point where we don't constantly judge what's going on in the world and with me and with the surrounding, and value it up and balancing it up or weighing it up in good and evil. If we do that too much, we get really bogged down. It's a tiring thing. It's a distressing thing, because it makes us realize how much evil there is, instead of realizing that there is no evil. So that one begins to see that all those students who can make from time to time that step from metaphysics to science, that they begin to feel a new freedom. That freedom that does not know an opposite. Or let's take some of soul. In soul, metaphysically, we say, well, we have to identify ourselves rightly. We have to identify ourselves as idea. Well, that's right. That's nothing to be objected to, but it is only metaphysics. From the point of view of science, soul, God identifies me. I don't have to identify myself as idea, because it's a jolly hard job. Constantly to identify myself rightly. I must identify myself right. I must identify that situation rightly. It's right to do it, as long as we are there. But once the time must come to get further to and step further and see that all that there is going on is soul identifying itself and its whole universe constantly right, that soul does it, and that naturally wakens up in us that spiritual sense which just always does identify right. In metaphysics, we feel in soul that we have to control our thoughts constantly, that we have to control if our thoughts are governed by illusions or by ideas, whereas in science we see that soul is controlled, that soul does that controlling, that soul keeps in check, that soul keeps error in check. I don't have any more constantly to fight against evil and handle evil madly by knocking down what is not right and by establishing that which is true. There in soul I suddenly feel that certainty within oneself, a steadiness, a consistency within oneself, which says this is soul's idea, and that's the only thing there is. See, that's why as long as we are thinking on the plane of metaphysics, we try to find an answer. Whereas from the point of view of soul, the answer is always given to us. The definiteness of the answer is always given to us. We just know that we know. It's no more than a question, how do I know that I know? How do I know that I know right? You know that you know. Soul is then so definite that you can't mistake it. It's just like an elephant trampling on you. You can't mistake it was an elephant and not a cat. In metaphysics, we are engaged in exchanging things into thought. Exchanging things into thought. Exchanging things into thought. And there are so many things in our world that you have to exchange things into thought quite madly. What does science say? Divine science rising above matter excludes matter. See? And there you don't have to exchange what is excluded. There soul identifies itself to us. In metaphysics, we have to reform. And it's certainly a wonderful quality to be willing to reform ourselves. But it's a heavy job. It's a very heavy job. If we arise in the consciousness to be one with soul, then soul reforms us. Soul changes us. We don't have to change ourselves. It just happens. It just comes on us without struggle, without striving. It just comes by grace. It changes. Well, let's take a few of principle. In principle, we can hear how we say that thoughts are very powerful, that thoughts operate in a powerful way. But thoughts are limited. Ideas are unlimited. And so from the point of principle as science, we can see that ideas operate by themselves on the ground that they are ideas of the one infinite ever-operative principle. So at that point, I stop trying to operate through thinking, through consistent, tough thinking. But there, I'm constant in the consciousness that the one principle operates all the time, at every place, under every circumstance, in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. Truth, or principle, operates. In metaphysics we say we should work out a problem, and I go and sit down and work out a problem, and it's working out a problem. Therefore you have a problem. You start out from a problem. You start out from the possibility and accepting that there is a problem and that we have to make nothing of it. Whereas in science we are not going to work out a problem. In science we are finding out that there is no problem. In science, we are seeing that there is only the eternal rhythm of divine ideas. And in that eternal rhythm, there is no problem. So, I'm not going to solve a problem as in metaphysics, but in science, I begin to see that there is no problem to be solved. That's science. Let's take life. Well, in life we know that the metaphysician says, and I wish we would do it what he says and do it properly, because metaphysics is right in its place, we have to live God. We have to live our science, or whatever the rendering is. Well, from the point of view of science, we are not going to live God. But God is life, and life lives us. I begin to realize the wonderful thing that there is one life, just one life in all the world, in all eternity, in all space and time, one life. And therefore, because there is one life, that's the only life that lives. So it is living my life, your life, everybody's life, through all eternity and space. It's the isness of life. And then I don't have to feel that I have to live life. That's a cross. Nor do I have the feeling that I have to apply God in my life. In science, I feel that God applies me, that I am the experience of life, that I am life individualized in an infinite way, but that life, capital L, individualizes itself as me, as idea. In life, we try to resurrect thought, to improve thought. That's just what we have seen in the last subject, in the fifth subject, that the metaphysical method was to improve the methods of mortal mind, and that if we can see that mortal mind is replaced by metaphysics, that this will improve our health and our longevity. But we don't really have to resurrect, because resurrection means that we are dead and have to be resurrected and come into life. Life is the resurrection. Life is life. I am the life, Jesus said. I am the resurrection. I am the life. I am the truth. I am the way. We are not in metaphysics. We are going the way. We are following the way. We try to follow the straight and narrow. In science, we are the way. We are the very, very expression of life in an ordered way. We are the very, very exposition of that wonderful sense of infinite progression. Nothing can stop, really, that we are evolving and evolving and evolving. Nothing. I don't have to sit down and say, now I have to see that I can go a step further, that something new is revealed to me. I must work like mad that I find my way, that I can make a progressive step. It just comes on you. Life is just that one life, and that one life is expressed as life. And therefore we take part of the infinite progression of life. We can't escape being progressive. We can't escape evolving. Or let's take truth. In truth, as long as we begin to learn metaphysics, we are engaged in doing the right thing. And how are we afraid of doing something wrong? I think if we would stop being afraid of doing something wrong, would be an enormous progress. Well, I can't say that to a religionist. He will crucify me. He said, well, that's the pinnacle of religion, that you're not doing something wrong. Because if you do something wrong, you will be punished. And how we are afraid of being punished. Does truth know something wrong? Can truth do something wrong? Can truth allow something to be punished? Now, once we make the step to truth itself and are conscious of the ever presence of truth, the ever self-realization of truth, then we know whatever is going to happen is right, no matter if the human point of view says it is wrong and it will be punished. We can't help being right. We should lose that fear of that we are being punished for doing something wrong. Again, punishment is just a human belief. We'll see in the next chapter on the footsteps of truth how it takes up this false belief that we are being punished for something wrong. Well, let's go back to here. In truth, for instance, we feel that we have to apply truth, to apply truth to this situation, to that situation. In science, we see that truth by itself applies itself. Truth is too big then to obey the demands of men. Truth has demands on men, but not man has demands on truth, so that man can say to truth, do right, do express yourself, do apply yourself, do demonstrate yourself. When it comes to science, it's a completely new consciousness. It's that consciousness which is consciously conscious of the fact that truth itself is self-realization, self-expression, self-demonstration, and that we can't help that truth thus demonstrate itself. In metaphysics, we try to be conscious of truth. How on earth can we really be conscious of truth, as if we would have a consciousness separated from truth, which is the only true consciousness? So let's see that if we touch science, that we know that truth is self-conscious, and that's the only consciousness there is. Truth is consciousness, not we are conscious of truth. In metaphysics, we are going to make ourselves the Son of God. We claim our sonship, that it's right to do it. We stand to our true sonship, that's all right. But when we come to science, we are not trying to make ourselves the Son of God. There we see that truth is the only Son. That truth itself is sonship. And therefore that truth itself establishes itself as sonship. Therefore establishes itself in every man as the true man. Or let's take love. In love, really, we are trying metaphysically to attain something. The days of creation show us how to attain, how through a sevenfold ascending consciousness we attain perfection. But when the days of creation change into numerals and the numerals into the synonymous term, and the synonymous term in the last day into the oneness of being, then we are freed from that terrific, depressing belief that we have to attain anything. I think nothing wears us down, makes us more weary in our life, that belief that we should attain something. Love has attained. Love is a state of perfection. Love is a state of perfection at every stage of development, at every moment, in everything. We don't have to attain anymore. Therefore, as long as we are thinking in terms of metaphysics, we have the sense of addition, of adding one thought to the other, of adding one truth to the other, of accumulating one truth to the other. Whereas in science, addition gives way, really, to multiplication. to the fullness of multiplication. I think one time I did read, and if I haven't read, what Mrs. Eddy said to Adam Dickey. She said, "Now, can't you all get out of addition? You do not have to stay in addition all the time. If you have the same principle," see, now she goes to principle, to the synonymous term, "if you have the same principle, it is just as easy, and in fact easier, to multiply than it is to add. You must rise," she says, "out of the addition of Christian Science and let God, divine mind, multiply through you." This is a very nice indication, really, how we have to make the step from metaphysics into science. That with metaphysics, it is accumulating ideas. It is thinking along ideas, putting one idea next to the other so as to make a whole. It's not that way when we have touched something of science. Then science just multiplies through us. It is as if the wholeness of being is always present in each detail as a whole. It's the old material thinking that we can only get the whole by putting the parts of the whole together. Whereas more and more one begins to see, even in natural science, that each detail is containing the whole. That each detail is not a part of the whole, but actually that each detail is reflecting always the whole. Just as a seed is reflecting the whole tree. It has already everything within itself which is necessary for the whole, and so takes always the end for the beginning. So science takes always the perfection as the beginning, not as something to be attained. Well, to take a rough view of it, what shows us that metaphysics is something which tires us, whereas science is rest. God rests in action. If we can't get further than metaphysics, you see that what happens with all the metaphysicians. They get tired, awfully tired after years and years of work. Because that's quite understandable, because it's adding. Whereas God rests in action. And this rest we all begin to feel when we touch science. Is that clear? Metaphysics and science. Yes? All right. I think we have to see these things quite clear. And now, by the way, the word I was seeking the last hour was iatrogenic. Iatrogenic. It's iatrogenic. Iatro is the Greek name for physician. Genic is genesis. So what it means is the genesis of sickness by the doctor. So iatrogenic diseases are diseases which are generated by the doctor. That's a term that has gone into the vocabulary of the medical works. Iatrogenic. Spelling it. I-A-T-R-O-G E-N-I-C, iatrogenic, iatro, physician, genic, generation, physician, generated by physician, iatrogenic, diseases. Naturally, the psychosomatic medical people see that these iatrogenic diseases play a much bigger part than they have ever thought of. Yes. Now, after having shown the difference between metaphysics and science, I think now you can see, when we come to the sixth subject of truth, how that new attitude, that new standpoint sounds through the pages. I have summarized this subject, Christian Science Heals Through Truth. I'm not quite sure if this epitome really contains exactly what is meant by it, but you can see, compared with the preceding five ones, that it has this change in it. Namely, now it is truth that heals. Before it was, in the measure that you were turning towards the truth, your health is improved. So it was our turning to the truth that heals. Now it is truth itself that heals. You look as if you wouldn't be quite see. All right. Oh yes, fine. All right. So at this point, she would show through the subtones how truth heals really through the synonymous terms. It is not so really that in every subtone she would just bluntly say so, but the tone in it is that way. See, the textbook is written in a very artful way. It's not so written so bluntly as I would speak, but therefore it contains much more warmth, and it's rounder and not so harsh as I would perhaps present it in my epitomes. But out of the whole tone of it, we just have to hear and listen what is the melody. And so in the first tone you can hear it. I have written, truth heals through trust in the signs of mind alone. See, it's science, see, is not only science as such, but science always includes metaphysics. Metaphysics doesn't include science, but science includes always metaphysics. Science can't do it without metaphysics. So don't be disturbed if in the text or in my epitomes there is always still a sense of metaphysics involved, but the main tone is different. Here now, she shows that truth heals through mind. It's no more that truth heals in the measure as we understand ideas or mind or so. It heals through mind. Naturally, embedded in it is our metaphysical method of trusting in it, through the trust in this mind. But mind is that which heals. So, she says, divine truth is more potent than all lower remedies. She is quite gentle with the reader. She doesn't say that the lower remedies are metaphysics. But that would imply that the lower remedy is metaphysical healing. Therefore, she has taken out her discovery, which at the beginning she called metaphysical healing, and all those pamphlets were about metaphysical healing, and brought it right up into the science of healing, into science and health. So, divine truth really heals through mind, and not through lower remedies, not through manipulation, not through electricity and magnetism and hypnotism and drugs and matter and so on. All this is here. I can go over it rather quickly.